The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. I'm actually in here early this week doing a early recording because we are doing a cool client retreat down at New Harmony, I believe it's called, down in the Central Time Zone. So I'm going to be leaving this evening to have dinner with a handful of people, and then a really great event tomorrow, so I'm excited about that. So yeah, I had to come in on Wednesday to knock this out, but you will not be disappointed. Full of stuff to talk about. Hot Rod, of course, will join us as well. But let's do a little news of the week, of course, brought to you by Unrivaled Electric. They want to be your electrician like they are mine. They specialize in generators and solar arrays, veteran-owned. Give them a call at 812-361-3604. Find them on Facebook as well. And the Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my friend Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And finally, Kenny Bland Auctions. Yep, they're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate, and they always have auctions going on, so visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. The S&P 500, yes, down 5.5% year-to-date as of last Friday, but the index is up 4.8% since Russia invaded Ukraine, and that was the point of time where I put a video out letting people know when we had these geopolitical events, what typically happens. And it happened exactly, and I hate to say this, but exactly the way I thought it would, the way I described it, the shock and awe in the markets, and then the rally that followed. So we made up the losses from February and March, and we'll be talking to Rod as we enter the second quarter in 2022 of what's happening now. We are tax time, right? By the way, just so you know, Monday, the 18th, is your final day to file your tax return, not the 15th, not the 17th, it's the 18th. And for most people, you'll get those in. But for those like me, we'll have to file an extension and let everyone else get their stuff done and accomplished so that mine can get done later. That's just the kind of guy I am. I step aside and let you get all your stuff done so I can do mine later, and I'm not going to worry about that. But right now they're saying they estimate 57% of U.S. households will ultimately pay no federal income tax in 2021. What they account this to is the pandemic-driven legislation that eliminated the tax bill for many American families. That would be primarily the child tax credit. All right, we've talked about budgets, right? Well, in March, late March, they did release the White House budget for their 10-year projections. And, you know, these are always wrong, so I don't even know why we give them any airtime, but it's worth talking about because the Biden administration claims that the budget reduces deficits, not debt, deficits. So if I said to you, okay, I am spending $1,000 more than what I'm bringing in this week. You might say, okay, well, you'll make more next week. But no, I'm not really going to make more next week. I'm still going to make the same, maybe a little bit more, but I'm going to spend even more than that. So I'm going to spend $1,200 next 2 weeks from now. Oh, you'll make more later. No, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to make a lot more money, but I am going to spend some more. So 3 weeks from now, I'm going to spend $1,500 more than I brought in. See, that doesn't really work. That's called funny math. But then I said, you know what? You're right. I'm getting a little bit out of control. So I'm going to not spend $1,500 more than what I'm bringing in. I'm going to spend just back to $1,000 more than I'm bringing in. So I have reduced my deficit spending by $500. Do you get that? So it really doesn't accomplish anything, but that's what they say is going to happen. They say that the budget will reduce deficits by more than $1 trillion over the next 10 years. But the reality is, and I did not read it all, but I'm just using my notes from a very reliable source. The White House's 153-page release forecasts deficits of $14.4 trillion over the next 10 years. That's the difference between an expectation of $58.3 trillion of tax receipts and $72 trillion of outlays. That comes directly from the White House. All right, we're going to talk to Rod about this in a bit, and we mentioned it last week as well. But about 6 months ago, the yield on the 10-year Treasury note was 1.48%, and that was 1.2% higher than the 2-year note, which was sitting at 0.27. Last Monday, the yield on the 10-year note was 2.42, and it slipped under the yield of the 2-year Treasury note, which was sitting at 2.43. So just barely, right? It kind of just barely went under. The last time the yield on the 2-year note exceeded the 10-year was back in August of 19, of course, 6 months before the recession began. The recession began not because of that inversion. It happened because of the self-induced economic shutdown that we went through back in 2020. So we'll be talking to Hot Rod about that, but really about earnings season as they've kicked off. Let's talk about this because we'll talk more about this later in the show. On to the Senate. The House of Representatives did pass a bill called Securing a Strong Retirement Act, sending the bill to the Senate. The legislation is really designed to overhaul the current pre-tax retirement system in the U.S., which I've been promoting since 2015 when I did my talk at the Harvard Faculty Club on, you know, getting Americans retirement ready, including things like auto enrollment, auto escalate, auto this, auto that. But they're talking about, yes, expanding the auto enrollment in retirement plans. Yay! An increase in the age in which required distributions would have to happen from 72 to 75, kind of a phase-in of sorts. That's also moving on to the Senate. And improving access to employer-sponsored plans to even part-time workers. Yes, I was in Washington, D.C., I believe, in 17 or 18, as part of a lobbyist group to bring good retirement plans to small businesses and take that owner of the roofing shop or whatever it is that they were reluctant to do because of all the responsibilities they put on the owner as a fiduciary, and say, yeah, we need to make this easier for people to offer retirement plans. And that happened, and now they're trying to get it to where part-time workers have more access, which they should, you know. People need to be able to save. We're going to be talking about the catch-up provisions later. We'll be talking about some of the inherited IRA components of this later, and then a lot more as time goes on. But this Congress hasn't really passed many bills. They've only passed 108 bills. Now, that sounds like a lot, and with 8.5 months to go, but that's the fewest number of bills passed in any 2-year session of Congress going back to 1973, where they passed 284. Now, remember, if you need to go watch Sesame Street, watch it, but just because Congress passes or the House of Representatives passes a bill and it goes to the Senate, they usually give it a little bit of a bird bath and they send it back to get tidied up before they pass it or they just kick it to the curb. So that's the way our process works. It's a little, clunky at times, but our founding fathers were pretty smart guys and they figured this thing out. So it works. Not always perfectly, but it does work. And then lastly, you know, the big push is to quit buying Russia natural gas and oil, right? But what are you going to replace it by? And this has been kind of a running joke at my office because we're like, okay, European folks, you guys really wanted to go off the grid or off of fossil fuels. You wanted to go onto wind and solar and all that. I think the answer is that the combination of all this stuff probably is the short-term answer. Get all this stuff kind of working together. But I'm no expert. But I do know this. The 27-nation European Union announced on the 8th of March that it will end its purchase of Russian natural gas well before 2030. Isn't that about 8 years from now? But Russia currently supplies 40% of the EU's natural gas. So it's going to take some time, and that means here in the U.S., that's an opportunity. We can crank up our, you know, exploration. We can, our exports, you know, whatever it's going to take, that's going to be a great opportunity for the United States to take advantage of, if that really happens. You know, that's a long ways away. Our memories are short term, and we forget easily. So if it's just easier to buy from Russia in a few years when hopefully all this has been settled, then they'll probably just keep buying from Russia. Russia knows the long game here. They think longer than we do. You know, I mentioned this in a podcast or here on the show. The Chinese, you know, they think in 100-year increments, right? Centuries. The Russians think in like 50-year chunks. And the U.S., we think, you know, not beyond the where we can see. We typically think in about 10-year increments and usually even less than that. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, interest rates are on the move in a big way. What is that doing? What is it designed to do? What's inflation clocking in at? And I said it first, right? Maybe I didn't say it first, but when they started talking about transitory, this is just temporary, I kept saying, you can't call this temporary inflation. Well, we'll talk more about that when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. How do you slow things down? You do two things. You increase the cost of things so people don't buy it. You decrease confidence so people are less eager to do things like spend money on things that maybe aren't necessities. And that's how you start to slow things down. And when 70% of your GDP is based on consumer spending / confidence, that's where it starts to catch up with you. So the Fed's doing everything they can to slow this thing down. Inflation clocked in at a 40-year high at 8.5% for March to March. You know, I don't think that was a big surprise to anyone. What's going to really be a surprise is what happens probably next fall-ish, like October to October, November to November, when those numbers come in. Now, if they start to slow down, let's say they get into the threes and the twos, which I doubt they will that quickly, but they might. Then everyone's going to say, I told you it was temporary. Well, what's temporary, right? I mean, some people might say a 3-year period is temporary. They might say a few months is temporary. And that's where you can say things where you're always right. And that's the purpose of much of the talking heads out there. But it did clock in at 8.5. We're all feeling it. I've traveled a lot this year. Airline tickets are double what they were. Hotel rooms double what they are. Food prices, you know, very, very high. You go to a meal, a nice meal, and it's going to cost you out the wazoo. So just be prepared for it. But, you know, I did it. And after this last trip I was on, I'm like, okay, maybe I'm going to start slowing that down as well because it gets a little painful after a while. And then I have a trip coming up, which is a conference to Maui. And I was so excited that the national mask mandate would be lifted right after Easter so that when we flew next Sunday, we would not have to wear a mask as we enjoyed our trip, our long trip to Hawaii. But I just heard on the news that they extended it for 2 more weeks. What's 2 more weeks? But come on. I guess I'll have to eat a lot of peanuts and drink a lot of water or just sleep with a pillow and blanket over my head, which was a technique that I used last time I traveled, and it worked pretty well. Anyway, it is what it is. I'm just tired of all of this so I can move on with my, you know, with my life. I have moved on with my life, but I'm just kind of frustrated, as you guys well know, for the last 2 years, as I vented to you and everyone around me about some of the rules and policies that are in place. And for the most part, they've all been lifted, but this was one that I was like, yes, it's going to be gone. And it's a conference we're going to, but I'm going to take my wife and my son with me, and we'll spend a few extra days in Maui while we're there. You don't want to fly, you know, that far and be there for a few days. I did that back in January, and it wrecked me for about a week. So go there, get acclimated to the time, enjoy yourself, look at the humpback whales. They'll still be migrating along. And yeah, enjoy your time while you're there and then come back. And then when I come back, it'll be early May, and hopefully those April showers will bring all those May flowers, which have already started to pop up at my house. And man, we'll be on to Memorial Day before you know it, and summer will be here. Blink of an eye, man, we'll be back in the fall, wintertime, Christmas, and here we all go again. Man, they say as you get older, time flies. Yes, it does, and those that are older than me tell me, just wait. And I'm like, come on, you can't be telling me anything more than I already feel. I already feel like my life is rolling by so quickly. And, you know, there's been jokes said about life is like a roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end, the faster it goes. Well, at 52 years old, I can feel that roll spinning quickly. So trying to enjoy it the best I can. All right, interest rates, like I said, on the move in a big way. The big thing to me is housing. You know, when you could have a mortgage rate under 3%, And now we're looking at a 10-year treasury at around 2.5. And when you look at a 10-year treasury, it doesn't always work this way, but you want to add 1 to 2 and 2.5% on top of that. And that's usually what a 30-year mortgage will be. Well, you're looking at, 4.5 to 5% now on mortgage rates. That's even for decent borrowers. I was looking at the history of mortgage rates, and I'm not going to go back too far, but in the last 20 years, they've been as high as 7%. So we have enjoyed this for a really long time. Cheap money is no longer here. If you were able to lock something in, good for you. It's still not too late from a historical perspective to enjoy a decent rate. If you can get a 4, 4.5, even under 5, that's fine. You may just want to move something to a different type of mortgage. So what is a different type of mortgage? You don't have to have a 30-year fix. Talk about, maybe you want a 7-1 ARM, which is fixed for 7 years, then it will adjust after that. Do you plan to be in the house for that long? You may get cheaper money that way. So there's ways to cheapen up your cost of borrowing. But this is the main way they slow things down, make things more expensive. I talked about it last week. If you have a $500,000 mortgage at 3% versus 5%, it's going to cost you $7,000 more a year in payments. That's tough. That's really tough. And that's how things normally work. Slow down demand. That'll slow down prices, which will slow down the economy. And then people start to feel a little scary. People start to pull in, tighten up a little bit. And that's when the crap hits the fan. And that's when you go into, yes, the big R, which is recession. Now, do I predict a recession? Yes, I predict a recession. Do I predict when? No, I'm not smart enough, nor is anyone else to predict that. But typically when you have an inversion in the curve, then you have the Fed being aggressive as they are. Rod said it. I'll say it, that within 2 years, we will be right back to lowering interest rates and doing everything we can to get this thing going again. Mark my word. And hopefully after I have drinks with the manager of the station, he'll still allow me to be here 2 years from now, which we're going to get together, I think, next week. So I'll let you know. But I'm pretty confident I'll still be here in 2 years. And if I'm not, just write it down and remember, old Dave said this, and wow, he was right. But, after you've been doing this for so long, you kind of been through a few things. You kind of know what to expect. And when Rod comes on next, we're going to discuss, okay, if in fact that's the case, is there anything that I need to be doing now to really ensure that I won't be hit in a big way if we have this recession sooner than later? When I say sooner than later, maybe in the next 9 to 18 months. Now, what does a recession mean? It means receding. It means that things recede. It doesn't mean depression. It just means we slow down. Most recessions don't last that long. Most recessions might last, 3 quarters, and then you're back at it again. So it goes through all kinds of cycles. We've been there before, and we're not there now. In fact, things are hot. We still have great numbers with employees getting hired. We still have more jobs than people looking. We still have interest rates that are historic lows, even though they're on the rise. We still have consumer demand that's super, super high. And we're getting ready to kick off earnings season. Actually, we just kicked it off. So it's really, really important to hear what the CEOs have to say about what they see coming in the future, because the market moves on speculation. Then it will adjust on reality. Hot Rod is next. We'll be back. Slow demand with slow prices, which will slow down the economy, and then people start to feel a little bit scary, and then they start to pull in and tighten up, and that's when it hits the fan, and that's when you have the big R. We have the big R, Hot Rod, on the phone right now. And Rod, that was my segment prior to you coming on, just as we prepare for the fact that when you predict, a recession's coming, I just can't tell you when. Well, we will have another recession. I'm 52 years old. You're in your 50s as well. We've been through a few of these. We plan to be around for, at least 20 more years. We will see another recession, right, Hot Rod?
Yeah, most certainly will. And it is extremely hard to predict, just like you said. We've talked about it here because a couple of weeks ago we had the inversion of the yield curve, the 2s to 10s. It only lasted a couple of days, but that has been a bit of a signal, although it's not a great predictor, because the timing of when that recession came afterwards was so far out into the future. And really, if you looked at the shortest to the longest and the average, you have a wide spread there. So it really isn't a great indication of anything specific or something that you should take action to in the short run. But will we have another one? Yeah, we most certainly will. Will it be brought on by the Fed? Yeah, there's a good possibility, and I've discussed that a lot on both your show and Glass's show. It's not because I don't think the Fed chairman, Powell, or any of the Fed governors are any good. I just think that the task at hand is extremely difficult for them to navigate without having some bumpy takeoffs and some bumpy landings along the way. Doesn't mean it's a complete total crash and burn. But the thought of them being able to softly land an economy like this by making moves that don't truly feel the impact within the economy for 6 to 9 months at the bare minimum, and to make multiple of those moves and guess where it's going to lead you in 2 to 3 years, yeah, that's pretty much an impossible task. I don't care how smart you are. So, yes, it's what they should be doing. So it's not that they're doing something that they shouldn't, but will they overdo it? More than likely, just like they did with inflation. They wanted to get inflation running hot. They just never wanted it running this hot. So they let it run longer to try and make sure that they didn't cut it off too soon like they had done in the past. And now they've let it get too hot, and now they're trying to play catch-up and fight back with that. But, yeah, to answer your question, we most certainly will have a recession at some point in the future. It's probably not going to happen tomorrow. I would even be surprised if it would happen this year. But there will be another one in our lifetime.
So, Rod, I was talking before you came on that what does a person need to do to kind of recession-proof their portfolio? Now let's talk about what that looks like. So first of all, when you have rising prices, you want to own things that go up when prices go up. So you have to own things, right? When you're loaned to things, and this is why we saw bonds get just absolutely throttled the first quarter, and we talked about that last week, because you don't want to own something that has a fixed coupon of 2 or 3% when you have inflation running at 8 and rates rising rapidly. That would cause those prices to go down. But you want to own things. Now we're seeing earnings season kick off. And I guess there's 2 points to this. Number one, how do you recession-proof, if you can, your portfolio? And I know the answer to this, but I want to have you talk about it. Number two, what is important about this earnings season compared to past earnings seasons? Now, when I look at this earnings season, we certainly can say, wow, we're reporting these great earnings, but it's what they're going to say next is what really matters the most. So let's start with the recession-proofing the portfolio first, Rod, then we'll get on to the earnings side of things.
Yep. So on recession-proofing the portfolio, the big key is what's the time horizon that you're trying to protect yourself against. If you were planning to retire at the end of this year within the next couple of years, you should have already recession-proofed your portfolio prior to this. Doesn't mean that it's too late and you shouldn't be taking action. It just means we need to not wait until we begin to see something negative happen in the market to try and make adjustments on dollars that are going to be needed in the near term. So hopefully if it's in the near term, you would have already done something and reduced some of your equity exposure and begin to prepare for those early years of income distributions. If the time horizon is far longer, well, then recession-proof really is just to continue doing what you've been doing, especially if you're investing in a 401k and every single paycheck you're adding more to it. Because if we hit a recession, stock prices will more than likely go down, which means you're going to buy more shares, whether it's shares of individual stocks or units of mutual funds, on that dip than what you were the previous months off of that. So just to continue to accumulate all the way down as the market sells off a little bit, and then continuing that accumulation as it comes out of recession and begins to recover when the time horizon is long. I had that conversation with clients of mine that were in this week, and I said the volatility and what you're seeing right now helps people like you that are in accumulation phase and retirement is still far off, that we're not making adjustments to your allocation in preparation for retirement. We're still focusing on the accumulation side of things and where's the best place to put the dollars. And if we have excess dollars above and beyond 401k, what else do we do with them? that's the best thing to do, is to just keep plugging away in that accumulation state. But as we get some recovery in the market, it's up a little bit today. Today you're recording early on Wednesday. If we can begin to get a little bit of a recovery and get back to flat on the year, maybe even a slight positive gain, if you're listening to this and saying, ooh, I should have recession-proof already because I do plan to retire at the end of this year, at the end of next year, somewhere in the near future, take these bounces that you get on the equity side of things and begin to peel off some of those gains and to recession-proof those dollars, which is really just parking them in very short-term, low-yielding investments that will not have very much fluctuation, because that's the other thing you want to be cautious of. Don't just jump into the bond world and completely ignore what you're buying and what your duration is, because as interest rates go up, those bond values go down. So it doesn't do you a lot of good to recession-proof by pulling out of equity and throwing it into an intermediate or a long-term bond fund that then goes down because interest rates go up. So you want it to be highly liquid. You want it to be extremely short. It may even be money market, which isn't paying you very much, but you also aren't losing anything by sitting in the money market.
Yeah, and I did a podcast on, you know, one of the opportunities that the IRS has given people that are age 59 and a half or older while still working is the age-based in-service distribution or rollover. And if there's not a place to hide within your 401k, which many times there is not, most plans allow you to roll over a portion or all of your 401k or 403b while you're still working at 59 and a half, put it into an IRA, then you have the world open to you and you can do with it whatever you want. And there's a lot of really, really great tools out there that can be purchased that would recession-proof your portfolio. And we've talked about a few of those over the years. All right, Rod, on to earnings season. It's now kicked off. I'm sure earnings are coming in probably pretty darn good already, and we expect that will continue into earnings season. But what's the most important takeaway we're going to have during this earnings season that will give us some idea of where we're headed?
Sure. Earnings is obviously always crucial, but it is backwards looking. It's what has already happened, and it is very important in the analysis of moving forward. But this earnings season, probably a little more important than others, because we always want to know what the CEOs and CFOs have to say about the future. But I think given the inflationary environment we're in, and the inflation is across the board, so it's raw materials, it's finished goods, it's in the oil and gas sector, which has a huge impact through multiple different areas. Not only does it go into the manufacturing of products, but it's also going to have an impact on shipping those products around, even services. Most of the services are driving a vehicle to get to wherever they have to provide their service at, and that is going to cost them a lot more in that regard. So I think that we want to hear what they're seeing, the inflationary pressure that they're feeling within their industries and their sectors, but then also more importantly, what are they doing about it? Is it something that they believe within their sector is temporary? Once again, we're not going back to the old Fed transitory of inflation, but they may feel as though that some of the inflationary effects that they feel are starting to subside, meaning they don't have a need to pass that increased cost on to the consumer. But far more of them probably will be passing on at least some, if not all, of that inflationary pressure that they are feeling within their business models. And those are the things that we want to start hearing about before it happens. Because while we're going to continue to watch the consumer and see if spending habits change due to inflation, it's nice to try and get a gauge of that ahead of time based on what the CEOs and CFOs have to say about their own products, their own raw materials that they are buying and utilizing to create their products and services for the end user.
Yeah, and the University of Michigan puts the Consumer Confidence Report out, and they are showing confidence has been sliding. So we'll see, but we're going to keep our eye on things. Great job as always, Hot Rod. Appreciate you coming on early this week to accommodate my schedule, and I'll see you when I see you.
That sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Secure Act 2 gaining some momentum, headed to the Senate, already through the House. What does that mean? And more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Yes, the House of Representatives did pass H.R. 2954 on the 29th of March, called the Securing a Strong Retirement Act. It's now being sent to the Senate. They're likely to talk about it and kick it around and do something with it here in early April. But it is designed to overhaul the current pre-tax retirement system in the U.S., which includes an expansion of auto enrollment. Yay, that's a big deal to me. An increase in the age for RMDs out to 75, kind of a phase-in they're talking about, not just boom. And also improving access to part-time employment to a retirement plan. Now, I'm going to be in Kansas City early next month at my EdSlot Elite IRA Advisor meeting. Back in person for the first time in 2 years. Very excited about that. And we will know more. We're going to spend more time, and I'll be able to share more when I get back. But we're going to, hopefully by that point, we'll know what the Senate has done. It's not a big surprise whenever the Senate kind of gives it a little bit of a birdbath, marks it up, and sends it back to the House. So we'll see how that shapes up. But yeah, phasing the RMDs to 75, that is something that's being talked about. The question that someone asked me this week, why is that? And I'm like, well, it's a great question, because most people who need their money are taking it anyway, and they satisfy RMDs. They're not, it's not a big deal. It's only people with lots of money that worry about when, how much, and all that. So if they can kick this thing down to 75, it has to be something to do with budget stuff. Like they've decided to pull forward some expenses and push out some revenues or something like that. They're also talking about the penalty for not taking the proper RMD going down from 50% to 25%, or maybe doing away with that altogether. They may expand catch-up contributions, so giving you more chance to put more money away after the age of 50. But your catch-up must go to your Roth, not to the traditional. So they want to get their hands on that tax money now. So that's another thing as part of the RMD and part of the catch-up provisions. Again, none of this is law right now. I'm just letting you know what's on the table. So don't leave the show and say, oh, David said this. No, I said this. It's on the table. It's passed through the House. It's over at the Senate. They're going to vote on it. Or like I said, mark it up and send it back. The other thing, which I found very, very interesting, that's in the bill as well, that the match, you know, I've always said the money you put away should go to the Roth side. I don't care how much money you make, go to the Roth. The company match always goes to the tax later side. Part of this provision allows you to say, no, I want you to put it into my Roth side. Now, what would that cause you to do? You would have to pay tax on their contribution. So that would be a choice you might you'd be able to make, which is great. That means, again, they're saying, listen, we need revenues now. We need revenues now. But yet at the same time, they're pushing revenues off by extending the RMD age. I guess they're looking at it saying, okay, we have more people working and putting money away than we have people retired. We have 10,000 people a day turning, actually 11,000 to now turning 65 every day. It's going to continue for the next several years. So there's got to be some math behind these decisions on budget stuff going on. Also, a lot of talk about RMDs, required minimum distributions, and when you inherit some money from someone who's already on RMDs or not. Also the Roth. There's no RMDs, so you have to take it within 10 years. They're wanting to get that back into the system. Someone's like, well, they already had their tax money on that. Why do they care? Well, if you leave it in a Roth forever, that doesn't do anyone any good. They want to get it out, get it back in the system, get it taxed again. The one I found interesting, though, on the RMDs is that if you die and you're already taking RMDs, which is most people, and then they inherit that, the beneficiaries, yes, still have to have it all out within 10 years, but they're going to require you to still take that person's RMD every year during that 10-year period until you get it all out. So just a bunch of moving parts right now in this Secure Act 2, they're calling it. So I can't wait for all of this to shake out and for us to know more and learn more, and then we'll certainly pass it on to all of you. And then how do you exploit it? How do you take advantage of it? Because with every change in the rules, there's opportunity. And I think for us, for me, I love it. I love when things get shaken up and changed up. And I'm going to talk about Social Security when I come back. Something else is now finally getting some talk. Like, hey, how are we going to fix this problem? That we, you know, when we first started, we had 40 people paying in to one taken out. Now it's like two or less than 2 to 1. Boomers retiring in droves. The Social Security Trust Fund on the brink of being exhausted within 10 years. I mean, what are we going to do to fix this problem? So that's also being talked about right now, thankfully. Will it happen anytime soon? Probably not. But it is being talked about, and I'm going to give you some insight of my thoughts on that when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, let's talk Social Security for a minute. Now, let's just basics. You can still take it at 62 for now. Most of us are full retirement age between 66 and 67. You can still delay it, max it out at age 70. There's a lot of things that are still available to you. But the real question is, how are we going to pay for all this? You know, back when Social Security was first introduced in the early 1930s, it was amazing because we had 40 people paying in for every one person taking out. We had tons of birth. We had low life expectancies. This thing was going to work in perpetuity. No problem. But now we've had life expectancies expand probably 20, 25 years since Social Security was first introduced. We have much lower birth rates, and we now have around 2 people paying in to every 1 person taking out. And that's where the math catches up. We have boomers retiring in droves, and guess is we won't see anything for about another year or more. But with retirement legislation going on, it has to happen, and it's being talked about. The last major reform was really in the early 80s with Reagan, when they did a lot of things to try and shore up the coffers. And Clinton came along in the 90s and did a little bit of adjustments there during his administration. So it's been about 20 years since we really touched this thing. So it's time. Now, yes, we read that Social Security Trust Fund will be exhausted in the 2030s sometime, and every time they come out, it's a little bit closer, closer, and closer. When I first started talking about this, it was probably in 2008, 9 or so a good while ago, and they would talk about the trust fund being exhausted in around 2042, and then it became 2040, and then 39, 38, 37, 36, so it's been creeping closer and closer and closer. So I'm going to say somewhere around 10 years from now, it's projected to be bust. What does bust mean? That means the revenue coming in will pay about 77 cents of every dollar promised. Is that going to happen? No. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to say, listen, right now, in this year, once you hit $147,000 of income, you no longer pay Social Security. Social Security tax for most employees is 6.2%. We pay 7.65% of payroll taxes, 6.2% is Social Security, and 1.45% is Medicare. Well, Medicare has no limit, so it hits everybody. No matter what your income, if it's $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $1 million, $10 million, you're paying 1.45% for Medicare. Wouldn't it make more sense if you lowered the Social Security tax down, but yet did the same thing as we've done with Medicare? So what if you took Social Security tax down to maybe 3%, but you uncapped it? I think that would be a more equitable situation. It would capture more dollars and probably would solve the problem, put some more money into people's pockets now who probably need it. Because if you think about it, if you make 147 and below, it's probably disproportionately unfair that you're paying a lot more tax. And that's the thing they always want, is they want fairness. Now, is fair always equal? No, but in this case, maybe that's the right thing to do. So I think you'll see some creative stuff come out of Congress, because they're looking at this thing. We're looking at wages. We're looking at how to pay for this thing and not have to worry about it for another 20 years. And I think that's going to be one of them. They're going to uncap it. But remember, that's only half the story, because you pay half, but your employer pays half. So I pay 7.65% on every single employee that we have. And we have 17 employees, and that 7.65% of all their salary is paid by me. Now, if that Social Security weight tax goes down to 3% but is unlimited, then my taxes would go down as an employer, which I'd be grateful for, because not everyone in my organization makes over $147,000. So it would actually go down. But it might go up for some larger employers that have people that are highly compensated, that are making, you know, $250,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year. So once again, helps the small guy out, me. So I'm all for that, right? It's how it affects you, whether you're for it or against it. That's the way the American mind works. That's the way my mind works. Although that's not always the way it works. I do, sometimes I'm like, all right, I'm willing to take it on the chin a little bit for this purpose. But generally speaking, you know, I like to for things to work out in my to my advantage. But that's how it works. That's going to be the fix, and I think you'll see more of that to come. I hope they don't keep it at 6.2 and just raise it to 250, which was really gaining tons of traction a couple of years ago, because I still don't think that's a fair way to solve the problem. I think lower the Social Security tax and then uncap it, and then you'll solve the problem, and you'll really be, it'll be better off for everybody. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show, okay? It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I promised a few weeks ago that I would begin getting guests back on the show. And to be quite honest, I just haven't had time to reach out to some of my old standbys, but I will. And I know that that'll be good to have some new voices on the show. But hopefully, you know, we continue to bring good content, stuff that's interesting to you, stuff you can talk about around the table at work and things like that. And then also check out the podcast. I'm going to be doing number 13, I believe, and it's basically on capital gains and why capital gains are different. And I have a great story to tell about a huge success when it comes to a family farm in Wisconsin, and a little story I'll tell you about how we were able to protect the stepped-up cost basis on that, but still essentially transfer title to the kids ahead of time, and doing exactly what the family wanted, but avoided paying hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes. And it was so funny because, you know, as an investment advisor like myself, you know, we charge, what, around 1? It depends. But let's just call it 1%, and or maybe more if it's less, or less if it's more, but around 1%. So I worked through this entire situation with this person. We don't charge anymore for any other advice. It's like you get it all for that, for whatever it is that we're charging to manage the assets. So it was funny because we did all this, and these folks have always kind of beat me up over fees. I could probably give it to them for free, and they still figure out a way to beat me up over something. But they're great folks. But I said, after saving hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxes, I looked across the table and I said, "Now, isn't that worth 1%? And they laughed and I laughed. So I think that fee discussion has probably been put to rest. Yeah, you've got to think about what's the value in a relationship. Everyone focuses, oh, what's it going to cost me to have the assets managed? That's not the cost. The fact is I'm paying a fee to potentially avoid my retirement account being decimated in higher taxes. What's that worth? How do I assure that we eliminate one of the biggest risks of all, longevity risk, right? How do we get that off the table? You know, how do we address sequence risk? How do we recession-proof a portfolio in preparation for retirement? What's that worth, right? So people get so focused on the fee I'm paying to do the investments. No. That's only part of the story. That's a fair price, by the way. It's a very fair price. But what else are you getting? If you're getting the runaround that says, you know what, go seek advice from your tax person for little basic stuff, or you need to go seek legal advice, who wants to do that? If I have a very basic question, I might say, hey, here's how it works. But, you know, I'm not a CPA. I'm not a lawyer. I just have 28 years of, you know, battle experiencing doing this every single day. So I always say I'm using my 28 years of experience and thousands of client meetings and opportunities to research and talk about different topics, and that's how I get the information to you. Let's take a long break. How about that? We'll see you next week. But we're going to replay the show Saturday morning at 9 a.m. It'll be on iTunes and Google Play and all that kind of stuff after Thursday night's run, and, of course, always on WGCLRadio.com. Have a great Easter, everyone. It's going to be, what, Friday here. We have Friday, and that's a big deal. And then we have Sunday, which is even the biggest deal so of all. So put your goodies on and head to church on Sunday morning. If you haven't been there all year, it's time for you to go. Well, have a good one, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.